Sandman Stories presents Chapter 5 in the Panchatantra book, The Loss of Friends, entitled Godly and June. In the previous chapter, Rusty the Lion and Lively the Bull became fast friends, leaving the jackals, Cheek and Victor, out of a job and very hungry. Victor admitted his error in introducing Rusty and Lively, and tells Cheek how it was his fault in the three stories of Godly and June. Content note, there is talk of the world's oldest profession and a bit of violence. So, if there are sensitive ears, you might want to skip the story of the Weaver's Wife in the middle of the podcast. I'll give a little heads up in that story, and we'll get going from there. Okay, let's begin. Godly and June. In a certain district, there was a monastery in a secluded spot. In it lived a holy man named Godly, who in course of time acquired a great sum of money by selling finely woven garments and the numerous offerings of the faithful for whom he performed sacrifices. As a result, he trusted no man, and kept his treasure under his arm by night and day, for there is wisdom in the proverb. Money causes pain in getting, in the keeping pain in fretting, pain in loss and pain in spending, damn the trouble, never ending. Now a rogue named June, who took other people's money from them, observed the treasure under his arm and reflected, how am I to take this treasure from him? In the first place, I cannot pierce the wall of the cell, which is compactly built of solid stone, and I cannot enter the door, which is too high. I will talk to him, win his confidence, and become his disciple, for he will be in my power when I have his confidence. As the proverb says, none lacking shrewdness flatter well, none but a lover plays the swell, no saints are found in judgment seats, no clear straightforward speaker cheats. Having thus made up his mind, he drew near to Godly, uttered the words, glory to Shiva, amen, fell flat on his face, and spoke with deference, O holy sir, all life is vanity, youth slips by like a mountain torrent, the days of our life are like a fire and chaff. Delights of the flesh are as the shadow of a cloud. Union with son, friend, servant, wife is but a dream. All this I discern clearly. What shall I do that I may safely cross the sea of many lives? On hearing this, Godly said respectfully, my son, blessed art you. Being thus indifferent to the world in early youth, what says the proverb? 'Tis only saints in youth that can be saints in truth, and who is not a saint when ebbing passions faint? And again, first mind then body ages, in the case of holy sages, the body ages first, mind never in the worst. And as for your search to find the means of safely crossing the sea of many lives, just listen to this. A hangman with his matted hair, or serf or other man through prayer, to holy Shiva changes caste, becomes pure Brahman at the last. Six syllables, a little prayer, a single blossom resting there, on Shiva's symbol and on earth, no further pain, no later birth. When he had listened to this, June clasped the holy man's feet and said deferentially, this being so, holy sir, pray do me the favor of imposing a vow. My son, answered Godly, I am ready to oblige you, but you must not enter my cell by night, for renunciation is recommended to ascetics, to you and to me as well. As the proverb puts it, ascetics come to grief through greed, and kings who evil counsels heed, children through petting, wives through wine, through wicked sons a noble line. A Brahmin through unstudied books, a character through haunting crooks, a farm is ruined through neglect, and friendship lacking kind respect. Love dies through absence, fortunes crash, through naughtiness and hoarded cash, through carelessness or giving rash. So, after taking the vow, you must sleep in a hut of thatch at the monastery gate. Holy sir, said the other, your prescription is the law of my life. I shall need it in the next world. So, sleeping arrangements being made, Godly graciously gave him initiation and granted discipleship. June, for his part, made the holy man very happy by rubbing his hands and feet, bringing writing paper and other services. Still, Godly kept his treasure under his arm. As the time passed in this manner, June reflected, "Dear me, do what I will, he does not trust me. So, shall I kill him with a knife in broad daylight, or give him poison, or butcher him like a beast?" While he was reflecting thus, the son of a pupil of Godly's came from the village bearing an invitation, and he said, "Holy sir, pray come to my house for the ceremony of the sacred thread." And when Godly heard this, he started with June. Now as he traveled, he came to a river, seeing which he took the treasure from under his arm, wrapped it carefully in his patched ascetic robe, worshipped the appropriate gods, and said to June, "June, I must step aside. Please keep careful watch of this robe and of the necessary until I return." With these words he moved away, and as soon as he was out of sight, June seized the treasure and decamped. Next story, The Jackal at the Ram Fight. Now Godly sat down, perfectly carefree, for his disciple's countless virtues had lulled his suspicions. As he rested, he saw a herd of rams, and two of them fighting. These two would angrily draw apart and dash together, their slab-like foreheads crashing so that blood flowed freely. This spectacle attracted a jackal, whose soul was in the fetters of carnivorous desire, and he stood between the two, lapping up the blood. When Godly observed this, he thought, "Well, well, this is a dull-witted jackal. If he happens to be between just when they crash, he will certainly meet death. This inference seems inescapable to me." Now the next time, being greedy as ever to lap up the blood, the jackal did not move away, was caught between the crashing heads, and was killed. Then Godly said, "The jackal at the ram fight," and grieving for him, started to resume his treasure. He returned in no haste, but when he failed to find June, he hurried through a ceremony of purification, then examined his robe. Finding the treasure gone, he fell to the ground in a swoon, murmuring, "Oh, oh, I am robbed." In a moment he came to himself, rose again, and started to scream, "June! June! Where did you go after cheating me? Give me answer!" With this repeated lamentation, he moved slowly on, picking up his disciples' tracks and muttering, "And we, when tricked by June." Okay, and this is where I will give the content warning. This is the start of The Weaver's Wife. So if you have some sensitive listeners or you don't want to listen to this, I completely understand. The Weaver's Wife. Now as he walked along, Godly spied a weaver, who with his wife was on his way to a neighboring city for liquor to drink, and he called out, "Look here, my good fellow, I come to you a guest, brought by the evening sun. I do not know a soul in the village. Let me receive the treatment due a guest, for the proverb says, 'No stranger may be turned aside who seeks your door at eventide. Nay, honor him, and you shall be transmuted into deity.'" And again, "Some straw, a floor, and water, with kindly words beside, these four are never wanting where pious folk abide." And once again, "The sacred fires by kindled word, and Indra by the chair is stirred, Krishna by water for the feet, the Lord of all by things to eat." On hearing this, the weaver said to his wife, "Go, my dear, take this guest to the house. Treat him hospitably, giving him water for the feet, food, a bed, and so on, and stay in the house yourself. I will bring plenty of wine and meat for you." With this, he went farther. So the wife started home with Godly, and she showed him a laughing countenance, for she was a whore, and had certain swain in mind. Indeed, there is sense in the verse. "When night is dark, and dark the day, when streets are mired with sticky clay, when husband lingers far away, the flirt becomes supremely gay. The wench cares not a straw to miss, the covered couch, the husband's kiss, the pleasant bed, in place of this, she ever seeks a stolen bliss." And again, "For stranger men the slut will see, the ruin of her family, the world's reproach, the jailer's key, will risk a death. she cannot flee. Then she went home, offered Godly a rickety cot, and said, My holy sir, a woman friend has come from the village, and I must speak to her. I will be back directly. Meanwhile, you may stay in our house, but please be careful. With this, she put on her best things and started to find her swain. At this moment, she ran into her husband, clasping a jug of wine. He was reeling drunk. His hair was tousled, and he stumbled at every step. She ran when she saw him, entered the house, took off her finery, and appeared as usual. Now the weaver had seen her flee, had observed the finery, and since he had previously heard the gossip that went the rounds about her, his heart was troubled and anger overcame him. So he entered the house and said, You wench, you whore, where were you going? And she replied, I have not been out since I left you. What is this drunken twaddle? There is sense in the proverb. After wine and fever these, selfsame symptoms come, shaking, falling to the ground, mad delirium. And again, the setting sun and drunken man are both fiery red. They sink in naked helplessness. Their dignity is dead. When he had taken the scolding and had noticed her change of dress, he said, Whore, I have heard gossip about you for a long time. Today I have seen the proof. I am going to give you what you deserve. So he beat her limp with a club, tied her firmly to a post, and fell into a drunken slumber. At this junction, her friend, the barber's wife, learning that the weaver was asleep, came in and said, My dear, he is waiting for you over there. You know who. Go at once. But the weaver's wife replied, Just see what a fix I'm in. How can I go? You must return and tell my adorer that I cannot possibly meet him there at this moment. My dear, said the barber's wife, do not say things like that. For a wench of spirit, this is no way to behave. As the saying goes, those who earn the name of bless show a camel-like persistence when they pluck the fruit of pleasure, counting neither toil nor distance. And again, as the other world is doubtful, and as scandal mistress truth, when you've hooked another's lover, best enjoy the fruit of youth. And once again, fate may rob him of his manhood, he may be handsome or be ugly, yet a wench, whatever it cost her, entertains her lover snugly. Very fine indeed, said the weaver's wife. But tell me, how am I to go when I am tied fast? And here lies my husband, the brute. My dear, said the barber's wife, he is helpless with drink, and will not wake until the sun's rays reach him. I will set you free, and take your place myself, but you must hurry back when you have entertained your admirer. This she did, and a moment later the weaver rose, a little mollified, and said drunkenly, Come, you nagger. If you will stay at home after today and stop nagging, I will set you free. The barber's wife said nothing, fearing that her voice would betray her. Even when he repeated his offer, she made no answer. Then he became angry and cut off her nose with a sharp knife, and he said, Whore, now you can stay there. I shall not be nice to you again. So he fell asleep muttering. Now Godly, having lost his money, was so tormented by hunger that he could not sleep, and was a witness to all that the women did. Presently the weaver's wife, after enjoying the full delight of love with her swain, came home and said to the barber's wife, Well, are you all right? I hope that brute did not get up while I was gone. And the barber's wife answered, The rest of me is all right, but I've lost my nose. Set me free quick before he wakes up. I want to go home. If not, he will do something worse next time. Cut off ears and things. So the wench freed the barber's wife, took her former position, and cried reproachfully, Oh, you dreadful simpleton, I am a true wife, a model of faithfulness. What man is able to violate or disfigure me? Listen, ye guardian deities of the world. Earth, heaven, and death, the feeling mind, sun, moon, and water, fire, and wind, both twilight's justice, day and night, discern man's conduct, wrong or right. So if I am a faithful wife, may these gods make my nose grow again as it was before. More than that, if I have had so much as a secret desire for a strange man, may they reduce me to ashes. After this explosion, she said to him directly, Look, you villain, by virtue of my faithfulness, my nose has grown back as it was before. And when he took a torch and examined her, he found her nose as it was originally, and a great pool of blood on the floor. At this he was amazed, released her from the cords, and flattered her with 100 wheedling endearments. Now Godly had seen the whole business, and he was amazed and said, "Learn science with the gods above, or imps in neither space, yet women's wit will rival it, how keep them in their place? Behold the faults of woman born, impurity and heartless scorn, untruth and folly, reckless heat, excessive greediness, deceit. Be not enslaved by women's charm, nor wish them grow in power to harm. They're slaves of manly feelings stripped, are tame, pet crows whose wings are clipped. Honey in the woman's words, poison in her breast, so although you taste her lip, drub her on the chest. This palace filled with vice, this field where sprouts suspicion's crop, this whirling pool of doubts, this town of recklessness, sins aggregate, this house where frauds by hundreds lie in wait. This basket full of riddling sham and quip, or guessing which our best and bravest trip. This woman, this machine, this nectar bane, who set it here to make religion vain? A bosom hard is praised, a forehead low, a fickle glance, a mumbling speech and slow. Thick hips, a heart at constant tremors move, a natural twist in hair and twists in love. Their virtues are a pack of vices. Then let beasts adore the fawn-eyed things, not men. For reason good they laugh or weep, they trust you not, your trust they keep. These graveyard urns, oh, haunt them not, keep kin and conduct free from spot. The lion over whose awful face falls fierce, the tousled mane, the elephant upon whose cheeks streams ichor's glistening rain. The men of wit or courage who, in books, the battles gleam, in presence of their females, all turn into cowards supreme. And once more, this gunja fruit, oh, what was God about, is poisonous within and sweet without. In these meditations, the night dragged drearily for the holy man. Meanwhile, the go-between went home with her nose cut off and reflected, what is to be done now? How is this great deficiency to be concealed? The night during which she had pondered thus, her husband spent in the king's palace, practicing his trade. At dawn he came home, and being eager to begin his thriving business with the townspeople, he stopped at the door and called to her, "My dear, bring me my razor case at once. The townspeople need my services." Hereupon an idea occurred to the noseless woman. She remained in the house, but sent him a single razor, and the barber, angry because the entire case had not been delivered, flung the razor in her direction. This gave the wench her opportunity. Lifting her hands to heaven, she dashed from the house screaming with all her might, "Oh, oh, oh, the ruffian! I was always a faithful wife. Look, he cut off my nose. Save me, save me!" Hereupon the police arrived, thrashed the barber limp, tied him fast, and took him to court with his wife whose nose was gone. And the judges asked him, "Why did you do this ghastly thing to your wife?" Then, his wits being so addled by astonishment that he could give no answer, the juryman quoted law. The guilty man is terrified by reasons of his crime, his pride is gone, his powers of speaking fail, his glances rove, his face is pale. And again, the sweat appears upon his brow, he stumbles on, he knows not how, his face is pale, and all he utters is much distorted, for he stutters. The culprit always may be found to shake and gaze upon the ground. Observe the signs as best you can, and shrewdly pick the guilty man. While, on the other hand, the innocent is self-reliant, his speech is clear, his glance defiant, his countenance is calm and free, his indignation makes his plea. The prisoner is obviously guilty. The legal penalty for assaulting a woman is death. Let him be impaled. But Godly, seeing him led to the place of execution, went to the officers of justice and said, "Gentlemen, you make a mistake in putting this wretched barber to death. His conduct has been correct. Pray, listen to these words of mine. The jackal at the ram fight, and we when tricked by June, the meddling friend were playing a self-defeating tune." So the officers said, "How was that, holy sir?" Then Godly related to them the three stories, complete in every detail. And they were all astonished as they listened. They set the barber free and said, "Slay not a woman, Brahmin child, an invalid or hermit mild. In case of major dereliction, disfigurement is the infliction." Now she has lost her nose through her own act. As additional punishment from the king, let her ears be cut off. When this had been done, Godly, strengthening his spirit by the two examples, returned to his own monastery. And this is why I say, the jackal at the ram fight, and the rest of it. Well, said Cheek, such being the case, what are you and I to do? And Victor answered, even in these circumstances, I shall have a flash of intelligence, showing me how to separate Lively from the king. Besides, he has fallen into serious vice, has our master Rusty. 4. Mad folly stings the greatest kings, who then embrace a vice, but servants' care should check them there, by means of learning nice. Into what vice has our master Rusty fallen? Asked Cheek, and Victor replied, there are 7 vices in the world, namely, drink, women, hunting, scolding, dice. Greed, cruelty, these 7 are vice. These, however, really make a single vice called attachment with 7 subdivisions. Then Cheek inquired, is there only a single fundamental vice, or are there others also? And Victor expounded, there are in the world 5 situations fundamentally vicious. And when Cheek asked, how are they differentiated? Victor continued, they are called 1. Deficiency, 2. Corruption, 3. Attachment, 4. Devastation, 5. Mistaken policy. To begin at the beginning, the vice called deficiency means there is non-existent of one or another of these. King, counselor, people, fortress, treasure, punitive power, friends. Secondly, when subjects, whether foreign or native, become restless, whether individually or en masse, there arises the vicious situation called corruption. Attachment was explained above in the words drink, women, hunting, and the rest of it. Here there is a love group, drink, women, hunting, dice, and a wrath group, scolding, and the rest. A man thwarted in the love group becomes obnoxious to the wrath group. The love group requires no elucidation. The wrath group, however, threefold as already described, needs some further characterization. Scolding is ill-considered imputation of the fault on the part of one bent on injuring an antagonist. Cruelty means ruthless and unwarranted refinements in putting to death, imprisonment, mutilation. Greed is covetousness, pushed to a merciless point. These are the 7 subdivisions of the vice of attachment. Now there are 8 kinds of devastation, by act of God, fire, water, disease, plague, panic, famine, devil rain, which is a mere name for excessive rain. This disposes of the vice called devastation. Finally, there is mistaken policy, where a man makes a mistaken use of the 6 expedients, peace, war, change of base, entrenchment, alliance, duplicity, adopting war instead of peace, or peace instead of war, or making similar mistakes in regard to the other expedients. There we have the vice of mistaken policy. Now our master Rusty has fallen into the very first vice, that of deficiency, for he has been so captivated by Lively that he pays not the smallest heed to counselor or to any of the other 6 supports of his throne. He adopts rather completely a vegetarian morality, so what is this use of a lengthy discussion? Rusty must by all means be detached from Lively. No lamp, no light. How will you detach him? Objected Cheek. You have not the power. My dear fellow, said Victor, there is a verse to fit the situation. Namely, in cases where brute force should fail, a shrewd device may still prevail. The crow hen used a golden chain, and so the dreadful snake was slain. How was that? Asked Cheek. And Victor told how the crow hen killed the black snake. Normally, I would not have recorded a chapter like that, or I would have rewritten some things, but I'm making a full recording of the Panchatantra, so I didn't want to drop a whole chapter or rewrite it. I'm recording the original, so I'm also really against violence and all that stuff with the barber's wife and cutting off noses and Ooh, and I try to keep this podcast PG-13 or pretty much PG, so that bit was a bit uncomfortable to record, but I hope you understand why I did it. And the listener shout-out goes to my listeners in Ar-Riyad. You are 66% of my listeners in Saudi Arabia. Alif shukran wa tisbar khair. Thank you, and good night.